Hello and welcome to this week's Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum. And we're continuing on the path to Rome, our long trudge across Europe. It's already taken us a year. we're almost there though. As Belloc trudges doggedly southwards towards the Eternal City, we see him today get to Bolsena, Montefiascone, and finally arriving in Viterbo. He's almost there. And so without further ado, let's join our pilgrim on his pilgrimage to Rome. I sat on the coping of a wall, drank a little of my wine, ate a little bread and sausage, but still song demanded some outlet in the cool evening, and companionship was more of an appetite in me than landscape. Please God, I had become southern and took beauty for granted. Anyhow, seeing a little two-wheeled cart come through the gate, harnessed to a ramshackle little pony, bony and hard, and driven by a little brown, smiling and contented old fellow with black hair, I made a sign to him and he stopped. This time there was no temptation of the devil. If anything, the advance was from my side. I was determined to ride, and I sprang up beside the driver. We raced down the hill, clattering and banging and rattling like a piece of ordnance, and he, my brother, unasked, began to sing. I sang in turn. He sang of Italy, I of four countries, America, France, England, and Ireland. I could not understand his songs, nor he mine, but there was wine in common between us, and salami, and a merry heart. Bread, which is the bond of all mankind, and that prime solution of ill-ease, I mean the forgetfulness of money. That was a good drive, an honest drive, a human aspiring drive, a drive of Christians, a glorifying and uplifted drive, a drive worthy of remembrance forever. The moon has shone on, but few like it, though she is old. The lake of Bolsena has glittered beneath none like it, since the Etruscans here unbended after the solemnities of a triumph. I broke my vow to pieces. There was not a shadow of excuse for this use of wheels. It was done openly and wantonly in the face of the wide sky for pleasure. And what is there else but pleasure? And to what else does beauty move on? Not, I hope, to contemplation. A hideous oriental trick. No, but to loud notes and comradeship, and the riot of galloping and laughter ringing through old trees. Who would change, says Aristippus of Plinthon, the moon and all the stars for so much wine as can be held in the cup of a bottle upturned? The honest man! And in his time, note you, they did not make the devilish deep and fraudulent bottoms they do now that cheat you of half your liquor. Moreover, if I broke my vows, which is a serious matter, and if I neglected to contemplate the heavens, for which neglect I will confess to no one, not even to a postulate subdeacon, it is no sin, it is a healthy omission. If, I say, I did this, I did what peasants do, and what is more, by drinking wine and eating pig, we proved ourselves no Mohammedans. And on such as he is sure of, St. Peter looks with a kindly eye. Now, just at the very entry to Bolsena, when we had followed the lovely lake some time, my driver halted and began to turn up a lane to a farm or villa. So I, bidding him good night, crossed a field and stood silent by the lake and watched for a long time the water breaking on a tiny shore and the pretty miniatures of waves. I stood there till the stars came out and the moon shone fully. Then I went towards Bolsena under its high gate, which showed in the darkness, and under its castle on the rock. There, in a large room, which was not quite an inn, a woman of great age and dignity served me with fried fish from the lake, and the men gathered round me and attempted to tell me of the road to Rome, while I, in exchange, made out to them as much by gestures as by broken words, the crossing of the Alps and the Apennines. Then, after my meal, one of the men told me I needed sleep, that there were no rooms in that house, as I said, it was not an inn, but that across the way he would show me one he had for hire. I tried to say that my plan was to walk by night. They all assured me he would charge me a reasonable sum. I insisted that the day was too hot for walking. They told me, did these Etruscans, that I'd need fear no extortion from so honest a man. Certainly, it is not easy to make everybody understand everything, and I had had experience already up in the mountains days before of how important it is not to be misunderstood when one is wandering in a foreign country, poor and ill-clad. I therefore accepted the offer, and what was really very much to my regret, I paid the money he demanded. I even so far fell in with the spirit of the thing as to sleep a certain number of hours. For after all, my sleep that day in the cart had been very broken, and instead of resting throughout the whole of the heat, I had taken a meal at Aqua Pendente. But I woke up not long after midnight, perhaps between 1 and 2 o'clock, and went out along the borders of the lake. The moon had set. I wish I could have seen her hanging at the quarter in the clear sky of that high crater, dipping into the rim of its inland sea. It was perceptibly cold. I went on the road quite slowly till it began to climb, and when the day broke, I found myself in a sunken lane leading up to the town of Montefiascone. The town lay on its hill in the pale but growing light. A great dome gave it dignity, and a castle overlooked the lake. It was built upon the very edge and lip of the volcano cup commanding either side. I climbed up this sunken lane towards it, not knowing what might be beyond, when, at the crest, there shone before me in the sunrise one of those unexpected and united landscapes which are among the glories of Italy. They have changed the very mind in 100 northern painters, when men travelled hither to Rome to learn their art, and coming in by her mountain roads saw, time and again, the set views of plains like gardens surrounded by sharp mountain land and framed. The road did not pass through the town. The grand, though crumbling, gate of entry lay up a short straightway to the right, and below, where the road continued down the slope, was a level of some 8 miles full of trees diminishing in distance, and at its further side an ample mountain, wooded, of gentle flattened outline, but high and majestic, barred the way to Rome. It was yet another of those volcanoes, fruitful after death, which are the mark of Latium, and it held hidden, as did that larger and more confused one on the rim of which I stood, a lake in its silent crater. But that lake, as I was to find, was far smaller than the glittering sea of Bolsena, whose shores now lay behind me. The distance and the hill that bounded it should in that climate have stood clear in the pure air, but it was yet so early that a thin haze hung over the earth, and the sun had not yet controlled it. It was even chilly. I could not catch the towers of Viterbo, though I knew them to stand at the foot of the far mountain. I went down the road, and in half an hour or so was engaged upon the straight line crossing the plain. I wondered a little how the road would lie with regard to the town, and looked at my map for guidance, but it told me little. It was too general, taking in all central Italy, and even large places were marked only by small circles. When I approached Viterbo, I first saw an astonishing wall, perpendicular to my road, untouched, the bones of the Middle Ages. It stood up straight before one like a range of cliffs, seeming much higher than it should. Its 100 feet or so were exaggerated by the severity of its stones and by their sheer fall, for they had no ornament whatever, and few marks of decay, though many of age. Tall towers, exactly square and equally bare of carving or machicolation, stood at intervals along this forbidding defence and flanked its curtain. Then, nearby, one saw that it was not a huge castle, but the wall of a city, for at a corner it went sharp round to contain the town. And through one even place, I saw houses. Many men were walking in the roads alongside these walls, and there were gates pierced in them, whereby the citizens went in and out of the city as bees go in and out of the little opening in a hive. But my main road to Rome did not go through Viterbo. It ran alongside of the eastern wall, and I debated a little with myself whether I would go in or no. It was out of my way, and I had not entered Montefiascone for that reason. On the other hand, Viterbo was a famous place. It is all very well to neglect Florence and Pisa because they are some miles off the straight way. But Viterbo, right under one's hand, it is a pity to miss. Then I needed wine and food for the later day in the mountain. Yet, again, it was getting hot. It was past 8. The mist had long ago receded, and I feared delay. So I mused on the white road under the tall towers and dead walls of Viterbo, and ruminated on an unimportant thing. Then curiosity did what reason could not do, and I entered by a gate. The streets were narrow, tortuous, and alive, all shaded by the great houses, and still full of the cold of the night. The noise of fountains echoed in them, and the high voices of women and the cries of sellers. Every house had in it something fantastic and peculiar. Humanity had twined into this place like a natural growth, and the separate thoughts of men, both those that were alive there and those dead before them, had decorated it all. There were courtyards with blinding whites of sunlit walls above, themselves in shadow, and there were many carvings and paintings over doors. I had come into a great living place after the loneliness of the road. There, in the first wide street I could find, I bought sausage and bread and a great bottle of wine, and then quitting Viterbo, I left it by the same gate and took the road. Thanks so much for joining me this week on the Path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. I'm not sure, it cannot be more than another 1 or 2 weeks before we actually get to the Eternal City. So stay tuned, as they say, and stay with me. And thanks for being with me in the Inner Sanctum. Until next week, goodbye and God bless.